It is July the 26th, 2011. I am Steve Gerwick, the webmaster of Gerwick.net. That's G-E-R-W-E-C-K.net. And today I welcome to the line a former WWE diva, and you may have seen her in Shimmer and all across the country working independently and also in Japan, which we'll talk about real quick here. I want to welcome former WWE diva, Serena. How you doing today, Serena?
Everything is great, Steve. How are you?
We're doing awesome. As I was telling Serena offline, this is the first time I've actually talked to Serena, but I've been following her career for so long. I remember going back to, 2005, 2006 when you're in OVW and then working independently, Shimmer, and then eventually you got, of course, got a developmental deal. I remember you were moving, because you were talking about it online, you were moving down to Florida. You were excited about that. So even though I don't know you personally, I feel like I already know Serena, so I look forward to talking to her today, and I guess the first question up front is, I know you just got back from Japan. Can you tell us what it's like to wrestle in Japan and how the culture is really different from the American culture to the Japanese culture?
Well, I have just loved every experience that I've had in Japan, so far. I've been there 3 times now, and I'm going back for my 4th in 2 weeks. And it's just, you know, it's for me, it's definitely a dream come true, as I'm sure it is for every wrestler that gets the chance to wrestle there. It's such a privilege. And the way that wrestling is accepted by the public there is so different than anywhere else in the world. It is so respected as an art form and as, you know, one of the biggest forms of entertainment in Japan. And, you know, the crowds are so different there, as anybody that's performed there has noticed, or anybody that's ever watched a Japanese match could probably notice. They're just very different. And I think that one of the greatest things about pro wrestling as a talent is that anywhere you go around the world, there's a different style. You know, you go to the U.S., it's one style. Then you go to England, it's a different style. Then you go to Japan, and it's a different style. Anywhere that you go is so beautifully different. And I think that it's a challenge to go to new places and learn different styles. And that's one of the biggest things in the growth of a wrestler, I think, is having those different experiences. And then just Japan as a country is beautiful and clean, and the people are just wonderful and so polite and so respectful towards you. And it's, you know, it's fascinating to walk around and to take in the sights. Every time I'm there, I try to do something different, see something different. And it's never ending, just the amazing different things that you can see there.
Yeah, I think you've been posting pictures from your tour on your Facebook page, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So if you want to see some of the sights and sounds of Japan, you can definitely check out her on Facebook. And we'll talk about your social media at the end of the interview. But talk about the Smash promotion that you're working for. And obviously there's a familiar face there that WWE fans and ECW fans will remember. Tajiri is actually the ones that is primarily the booker there or the promoter. What's it like working for Tajiri?
Tajiri is incredible. He has such a mind for wrestling, I mean, from a, you know, physical standpoint as well as the entertainment standpoint. He just has every different, you know, facet of creativity going for him. And he's really running a great promotion there in Smash. It's rapidly growing and increasing and, you know, running in bigger venues and in front of bigger crowds and just really accelerating very positively in the Japanese market right now, which is awesome. And it's such a different product than most other Japanese wrestling promotions, because he covers all the grounds of entertainment as well as having great wrestling on his show, and he runs it a lot like WWE in terms of, you know, creating feuds and storylines and just writing a really, really good show. So that's, I really believe that that's why the fan base is increasing so rapidly.
Now, can you speak Japanese?
I can't. I try to pick up stuff every time I go, but I would definitely love to learn Japanese. It's just, you know, it's challenging.
Because you know some other languages, right?
I know Spanish, yes.
Spanish, okay. What's the perception? Obviously, in the United States, we have like Shimmer and all women's promotion. How does the fan base react to women's wrestling versus here in the United States?
In Japan, you're asking?
Yes, in Japan in general, compared to the American fans accepting women's wrestling.
Sure. It's hard to... Okay, so in Japan, the women are treated the exact same as the men, just per my experience. And there's always, in Smash, there are always usually 2 to 3 matches involving women on the show. They do a lot of intergender and mixed tags and things like that that incorporate the women a lot. So they definitely use their women in a very strong wrestling role. And they're all very strongly established character-wise as well. And it's just, it's so different because you don't see too much of, you know, male-female interaction these days in the States. And I think it really adds an interesting element to the show with those interactions and those relationships. And I think it's entertaining. You know, wrestling fans used to see that a lot, and those were some of the most entertaining storylines to follow, you know.
I'm going to take you back kind of towards the beginning when you broke in with OVW back in, what, about 2005? Is that when you broke in?
Yes,
2005. Yeah, 2005. I remember as I was telling her offline, since we've had the website since 97, I remember obviously seeing her results in about that 2005-2006 window there. And kind of how did you get started, I guess, and who do you consider your trainers, and who were some of the professional wrestlers you admired growing up?
Okay. My first trainers in OVW were Rip Rogers, and Danny Davis, of course.
Uh-huh.
And I had, you know, trainers here and there that would come in and out of OVW that I definitely learned from. But I would attribute most of my development early on to Rip. And then later on in my last maybe 2 years at OVW, before I went to Tampa, I would attribute it to Al Snow. And so I would equally credit both of them, Rip Rogers and Al Snow. They taught me totally different aspects of pro wrestling, and it was awesome.
And who were some of your favorite wrestlers growing up?
Favorite wrestlers growing up? Well, I was a big fan of China. And then, of course, Molly Holly and Victoria, the Ivory, Jazz. I was just a big fan of the strong women and the women wrestlers. And then, you know, I don't think there's many females that can say that they were influenced by Trish Stratus and Lita in those years. Those were some awesome years for women's wrestling.
You, of course, were naming a lot of the female wrestlers, so I assume that when you were watching wrestling, it was something that you saw these strong style women and you said, that's something I'd like to do. And I guess those are the women that influenced you to get into wrestling, because after you've seen these women, that was going to be it. That was what you wanted to do. You wanted to be a professional wrestler.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, the switch clicked on the second I watched it. I was, you know, hooked, just like many wrestling fans were. And many wrestlers, and it's a cool feeling to just have that passion for something from such an early age and have those role models as well along the way.
What do you think is the biggest lesson you learned in OVW?
I would say, I don't know if you would consider this a lesson. I guess you would. I think just, like, respect for the business was one of the biggest things that OVW would always emphasize. And it was run by really old school guys, and that's a big thing. The respect factor is very important to men like that and women like that, and they ran it that way. And people, you know, learned early on to clean up the locker room and set up the ring and take down the ring and take care of your space and just, and, you know, those are some very basic principles that I think it's important to learn when you're first starting out in wrestling. You know, a lot of people skip over that, and I don't think that that does anybody any justice, you know?
What was it like learning under Jim Cornette?
Very interesting, always.
That's an understatement, I would say.
Anybody that's ever worked with him, like, they just, he has such a different passion and a different energy. Like, he is so passionate. So, of course, it's just amazing to work with someone like that. Because you can't help but get some of that. And that rubs off on you. So, if someone is writing a TV show that isn't passionate about it, it's going to translate. But someone like Jim Cornette is so passionate and so, like, his work is so important to him. So when he writes TV shows, it translates exactly the same way. And it's exciting, and it makes for a great product. So he's a great learning tool.
When you were in OVW, it was a developmental territory for WWE. And, of course, today it's not. Why do you think it's not? And do you feel that WWE is really missing a big opportunity to train and develop some of their talent by not using, you know, Danny Davis's system for development?
I guess I can't really say why it's not anymore. I know that WWE had the intention to really make Tampa and FCW its stomping grounds. So I guess that they just, I don't know, they didn't serve each other by doing business together anymore, I suppose. I do think that OVW is still a great center for learning for pro wrestling, and it's still run really well, and they still run TV every week. And so, yeah, I mean, it would benefit WWE, in my opinion, to have talent in both territories and get to learn that system as well. And then, you know, you can always swap in between territories, and guys can learn, guys and girls can learn even more that way. I don't think that a one territory system is as effective as, you know, a multiple territory system for talent. And I think that it would be a great thing to have multiple territories, but, you know, for now it's just one, and maybe in the future that will change.
I think that's probably one of the more interesting things, or maybe frustrating things, I guess, depending on how you look at it, because obviously OVW has produced Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, Batista, John Cena, Victoria, and the list goes on and on of talent that obviously you came from OVW, and yet we're seeing today's stars, you know, a lot of them have not hit the big home runs that the other stars have achieved. So, and at the same time, you know, OVW is still run by Danny Davis. You still have Rip Rogers as a trainer there. Eugene is there, Nick Dinsmore. We see Rob Conway. We just talked to Rob Conway a few months ago. Of course, he still, you know, works out there and still wrestles. So it's kind of mind-boggling to see what the success that OVW has had in producing talent for WWE, and at the same time, they're not working with OVW anymore. And I guess, you know, moving forward here with OVW, is there any plans for you to maybe go back to OVW? Because we're seeing some, like, former stars. Mike Mondo is back there now. Cliff Compton from Deuce and Domino is back at OVW. You see Rod Conway wrestle there. Eugene, is there any plans to go back to OVW?
It's definitely been a thought many times, and I would absolutely love to go back there. As far as full time goes, I don't see that happening right now, just because I have a lot of things going on elsewhere, and it wouldn't fit in. But I would definitely love to go back and do some shows there, because it's a very special place to me.
Yeah, I never met like full time, but I mean, just, you know, they bring back some stars here and there, and like a retro night, bring back somebody that you know, kind of broke into the business through OVW. I think that'd be great to see you, because I know they've got some other girls there that you know they could definitely benefit by, you know, wrestling you with the experience that you have that you could bring to the table. But going back to your training from 2005, 2006, who were some of the other girls that were training at OVW, and what was it like to work with ODB?
Oh my gosh. Well, at the time, we actually, in 2006, 2006 to 2007, arguably the best women's division in the country. You know, we had Beth Phoenix, Katie Lee, ODB, myself, trying to think.
Was Kara Slicer at that time?
Yeah, Kara was there for a little bit. She was more in a managerial role for Juice and Domino, but she definitely got in the ring a lot, and she was great to work with. She was a really good wrestler. And Beth was amazing to work with, obviously. Katie Lee and I had some really good matches. It was always very easy wrestling Katie. And ODB was just the greatest. I mean, it was hard to keep a straight face in the ring with her, because she's better at anybody than entertaining. And I mean, she's great in the ring too. So you put all those things together, and she was definitely one of my favorite opponents ever. And we, you know, even nowadays, if we get the chance to wrestle each other, we just have a blast. You know, it's so fun. So those were some of the best wrestling memories, definitely, of my career were those years working with those girls.
How did OVW differ, or how were they similar to Florida Championship Wrestling?
It's actually very similar for the most part between the two of them. I mean, a territory really is, I think the important elements of a territory are, you know, having a TV show so that people can get that television experience, and then building your live events around that, and, you know, running your live events based on what's going on TV, and then making sure that there are consistent live events that the talent are working to get that experience as well. And then, as well as, it's so important at a school like OVW or FCW to have great trainers, and FCW has phenomenal trainers. And I think that it's run really well, and it's a packed schedule all the time, and people are truly getting the same level of experience as they would get at OVW. So they're pretty similar.
In 2008, you had I believe you worked the Slammiversary pay-per-view for TNA. How was that, like, basically a tryout match? And I guess why ultimately didn't you not get signed by TNA at that time?
Yeah, you're right. 2007. That's right. Well, I don't know if I would consider it a tryout match of any sort. I don't really know, but it was more so, you know, it was in Memphis and we were in Louisville, and it was convenient to go do the show. And at the time, that was a big opportunity for me. And so it was great. It was a great experience. Why do I think nothing ever came of that? I don't really know. It's hard for me to answer questions like that, because I really believe that timing is everything. And things happen at the right time when they're supposed to happen, and things don't happen when they're not supposed to happen. So I suppose it just wasn't, I still had a lot of growth, as I still do as a wrestler, before that came about. And, you know, that growing as a wrestler never stops.
Now, TNA had you back, what, in April of this year, right, for a tryout?
Yes. I went to Impact Tapings in April.
And how did that go?
It went very well. I was actually in the ring with Katie Lee again for my tryout match, or with Winter, or rather. So it was nice. You know, as I mentioned to her earlier, I always really enjoyed wrestling her. So it was very, very fortunate that I got to wrestle her. And it was actually pretty funny because Al Snow was, you know, a big helper that day. And it was almost like deja vu, like having Al Snow as, you know, the producer down there. And then wrestling Katie Lee, it felt like 2007 all over again.
Have they given you, like, any information as far as, like, are they interested in bringing you in? Or is it just, like, right now with your schedule not conducive to working in TNA? Or is the door open to maybe working full-time for TNA?
I think in the future, it might be a little bit more probable. But right now, the experience that I'm getting in Japan and going to Japan as often as I am and will be going, it's that experience to me right now is unmatchable. And it's something that I've always strived for and dreamed of, and I'm enjoying that so much that right now I'm pretty content.
Okay, that's fair enough. And how did you get your, originally when you were signed by WWE, how did your developmental deal come along? And
I was signed actually at a SmackDown taping, SmackDown ECW taping, and I had gone to the tapings that week, Raw and SmackDown, and had a tryout match, which actually, funnily enough, was with Katie Lee. And so she had my WWE tryout match as well.
Deja vu all over again.
Pretty funny, actually, about that. But I had a tryout match in front of the producers and a lot of the talent, and it went really well at SmackDown, and that day I was offered a developmental deal just a few hours after that, and it was breathtaking.
I bet you just like surprised, or did you have kind of a feeling that this might be coming?
It was, I don't know, I think somewhere in the middle, because I had been trying for so long at that point at OVW, and I had countless tryout matches over the years, and I think I was really surprised that day because, you know, they always say that, like, the moment that you're least expecting something, it happens, and I had a lot of confidence going in, but I don't think I had any expectations, so not expecting something, and then it happens, it's definitely, it is surprising, for sure, but...
Do you feel when you were brought up from Florida Championship Wrestling that you were really ready to be, you know, on television and be, you know, a WWE diva at that point?
I don't know. I mean,
were you surprised they called you up when you did, or did you kind of have it in your mind that, you know, maybe I need a few more months down here, or I guess maybe, you know, is your psyche at that point saying, yeah, you know, I've worked and trained for so long and now I'm ready for my opportunity to be on television?
Well, you know, it was actually funny, the probably 6 months preceding my debut on SmackDown, which was January of 2010, and let's say 5 months before that, it was interesting because my experience at FCW was great. When I first got there, things took off really fast for me, and I was doing really well there. I was really confident, and you know, having some of the best matches of my career and all those good things. And then I got injured, and I broke my jaw, and I was sidelined for 3 months with that injury. So the 3 months before my debut, I was actually out of the ring the whole time and not really able to do anything, not able to talk. And so that was a rough time. And then I remember I got cleared back in the ring on a Friday, and then that following Tuesday, 3 days later, was the night I debuted at TV. So things happened pretty quickly right after getting cleared from that injury. And I was, at the time, I felt really rusty and very unprepared, but, you know, I wasn't put into a wrestling role, so that wasn't really an issue at the time.
Who were the agents that you were working for at that time, and were they helpful maybe in the process of moving from developmental to the main roster?
The talent?
Yeah, the agents you were working for, were they helpful to you? Yeah, because I got to think, going from, you know, working in Florida Championship Wrestling before a couple hundred people, and then you're suddenly, you know, 16,000-17,000 seat arena, that's quite a difference. Plus there's TV rolling, or you're going to be on live television, and all of a sudden they said, okay, go out there and perform. It's like, I mean, who are the agents, and were they helpful in maybe making the adjustment from developmental to the main roster?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the producers, as we call them, in WWE are amazing, all of them. And they more than do their jobs, you know, to help prepare talent and make talent comfortable and cover all the bases that they need to cover. So the producers, the main ones are Dean Malenko, Arn Anderson, at the time Fit Finley was there, and Jamie Noble, and Mike Rotundo, and they, all of them are just amazing at what they do and know wrestling better than, you know, most other people will ever know it. So they are wealths of knowledge, all of them.
Now, you wrestled for WWE for, you know, most of 2010. What was like the, what was the highlight there of your run with WWE?
The highlight of my run, I guess, I mean, it's cliche, I guess, but, you know, being at WrestleMania was probably the night that would stand out the most to me, because it was such an accomplishment. It was a very special night, and it was just a really unique feeling. So that night will always be probably the standout experience for me.
Yeah, that's the crown jewel. That's the Super Bowl of wrestling. So, yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
That's right.
I guess on the flip side then, I think a lot of us were very surprised, you know, when they announced they had released you. I guess, what ultimately happened, and what did they tell you when they let you go?
What they told me basically was, the Straight Edge Society group was ending, and there was a lot of questions on my part that never got answered and never will, and a lot of rumors and, you know, all that garbage around it. And, you know, it's just, I was asked about that so much for so long, and I just tell people, you know, believe what you want to believe, and that's really it. You know, you can't change people's minds or whatever.
Were the rumors hurtful to you, or is it just, you know, just part of being who you are at that time?
They were definitely hurtful. You know, I don't know. At the end of the day, everybody is still, you know, a human being, as corny as that might sound. But, you know, just because we are in the entertainment business, you know, I don't know. It shouldn't mean that everything is just displayed for everybody all the time. And I guess it just comes with the territory. and something that you have to accept. But, you know, when it's something personal and something that people really shouldn't be discussing, then that's when it's just kind of, it steps out of bounds a little bit, I guess, in my opinion.
When they let you go, did they kind of give you the impression that maybe somewhere down the line the door would be open for a return? Are you kind of maybe hopeful that, you know, tomorrow or the next day or the day after, maybe Johnny Laurinaitis might give you a call and say, hey, we have something for you. Would you come back?
I think at the moment, as I said, I'm really happy with what I'm doing and growing a lot as a wrestler and a person. And enjoying that process. So I don't know if that would be something that would be in the cards right now, I guess. I mean, of course, you know, that will always be, working for WWE is the best, and I'll always, you know, think that. But I think sometimes you also have to be where you're going to do the most growth. And I think that's where I'm at right now.
You know, they told you that, you know, basically the Straight Edge Society, SES, had come to an end for its run. Did you kind of agree with that, or did you think the group still had a lot of life and a lot of storyline to go?
I believe that we had a lot of life left. I think things ended really abruptly. And without reason and without explanation. And they built a really strong, good thing for 8-9 months and then just kind of crumbled it. So I think that there was a lot more potential, in the, you know, in the future of our group and our storyline or what have you. And yeah, I think that it was definitely not capitalized on.
Who came up with that group, that name? Who developed that?
That was all CM Punk. That was his baby.
That's kind of what I figured.
Yeah.
I had always heard that, I just wanted to confirm that. What was it like? And then I got to ask, you know, obviously you shaved your heads to be, you know, in the group there as part of the storyline. What did you think when they asked you, and I guess ultimately, what was it like to have your head shaved in the ring?
It was very shocking when they asked me, and I was definitely caught off guard. You know, you're taught to expect anything and everything and be prepared for them throwing anything at you because they can. But I think that was something I just wasn't ever expecting, especially as, you know, a debut, and it was very shocking, but it was a really great experience also, and it was a very memorable night, I think, a very memorable debut. Just running out of the crowd and getting your head shaved on live television is not something that you see every day, you know, in entertainment. And I think it was big. It was a lot of fun. The performance was great, a blast, and the response was awesome, and it was great.
What was your reaction when Fit Finlay was fired by WWE?
I was definitely shocked when I heard about Fit, and definitely disappointed because Fit was such a resource and such a great person and a great producer, and I think that everybody was a little bit bummed out about that. I mean, I'm sure that Fit will be back with the company when that time comes, but it was shocking news.
Now, obviously, you know, when working in WWE, you've worked with Vince McMahon, worked for him. obviously was around Hunter, Triple H, and of course now they're doing the storyline where Mr. McMahon is basically, you know, stepped down and Triple H is now running the show. And I guess what's it like to work for those guys, you know, behind the scenes? Are, you know, we always hear that, you know, Triple H is kind of an old school wrestling kind of guy, likes the more of the wrestling aspect of sports entertainment versus maybe what we've seen more with sports entertainment. So I guess how would you describe maybe the difference between, you know, Vince McMahon and Triple H?
Well, Vince is very, I think, entertainment-minded, which has made him very successful and the most powerful man in pro wrestling history, past, present, you know, future, everything. He knows how to make a product entertaining. Triple H is, Triple H as a performer was the total package. I think most people would agree. He was the entertainer as well as the wrestler. So he definitely has all the bases covered in that sense. But I do think that maybe more of his emphasis is on wrestling. I think that that's important to him. And I don't know. I mean, who knows? It could go in a completely different direction now. It very well may. But I think that Triple H, he was so professional to work with and always had feedback and was just very pleasant. Very, very pleasant guy to work with. And I think that that's going to be a really good thing to have somebody like that in, you know, a position of power and making decisions.
Now, obviously you worked with CM Punk, and of course in the last, month here, CM Punk's been like the hottest thing in wrestling. What was kind of your reaction to the storyline they did where, you know, he was leaving and now, you know, as of last night with Raw, he's back. So what was your reaction to the storyline they did with CM Punk and him being in the spotlight of kind of the wrestling universe right now?
I mean, it's great. You know, it's cool to shake things up and do something different and, you know, trick people, not trick people, whatever reaction you want to get, and run with that. And that's what they did. And Punk is so talented, and of course he's going to do phenomenal with any situation that's put in front of him, and that's what happened. You know, he really made a strong impact the past month or so, and it was great television.
And of course he lives his gimmick, right? Straight Edge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's your opinion of the current products with WWE and TNA? Do you get a chance to watch them? And I guess what's your overall opinions of the products?
To be honest, the past few months, I just haven't had much of a chance to follow wrestling too much. I've been traveling pretty much constantly since the start of the summer, and it's been hard for me to find the time to follow it. So haven't been up to date on the products too much lately.
I'm sure you probably even talk to your friends. They probably tell you what's going on. So you kind of get a sense of what's going on anyways, right?
Sure.
If you're not watching it every week. So, you know, your international travels, of course, you know, working for WWE, you got a chance to, you know, go across the globe and now working with Japan. Is there any place out there that you still like to maybe wrestle in the world?
Well, there are many places. I would love to wrestle, you know, in Europe again and all over and visit new countries, and I would love to go to Africa, South America. Any of those places would just be amazing. And of course, there's states and promotions within the U.S. that I haven't wrestled for and would like, or in, and have and would like to. So there's still a lot of endless opportunities and places out there, and I'm sure I'll make my way sooner or later.
What's been the biggest rib that's ever been played on you? Or have you ever gotten somebody really good, you know, a good rib for yourself?
I'm not a very good ribber. I guess I don't really have much of a poker face. So I can't really rib people very well. Oh, okay, I know the answer to the first question. The best rib that was ever pulled on me was after a Shimmer show, and it was actually a rib pulled by Daphne, and it was her first ever rib. Like, she has been in the business for, you know, 12 years or however long, and had never pulled a rib. And so we were sharing a hotel room, and in my sleep, they drew on my face and with Sharpie and wrote, you know, vulgar things. And the next day I had like a 6 a.m. flight out of Chicago. So I had to go to the airport with like pictures and writing on my face. It was a very cruel rib, but we all laughed about it, of course.
So you owe her one.
I definitely owe her one. Hopefully I can put the poker face on one of these times.
Talk about working for Shimmer. I know you've worked for Shimmer in the past, and are you going to be a part of the Shimmer tapings in October?
Yes, I am. I will be at the Shimmer tapings October 1st and 2nd in, of course, Berwyn, Illinois. Working for Shimmer has been a big part of my career. I started there in 2006, and the only tapings I've missed were during my time working for WWE. And it's an awesome place because you can just learn so much working with so many different women and having, you know, the number of matches that we have at the Shimmer tapings. And it's cool, too, because that was from, you know, an early on stage in my career, learning DVD aspects and storylines and all of that marketing. And so it's Dave Prazak, who's the founder of Shimmer. He has really created something special and unique, and it's known all over the world amongst women's wrestling fans or wrestling fans in general, and it's very respected.
And, of course, we know kind of with Dave Prazak, kind of Shimmer is kind of like the female version of Ring of Honor. So is there – had been any thoughts of maybe, you know, with Ring of Honor now getting on the Sinclair Broadcasting Network, and Jim Cornette, of course, is got his hands with on the Ring of Honor product. Is there any thought maybe of working for Ring of Honor?
That'd be great. I have really had a great time every time I've worked for Ring of Honor, and a great locker room and driven men and women to do something special with Ring of Honor, and they do. And with Cornette running things, you know, and producing a television show, it's going to be awesome. And, it already is, but it's going to continue to be awesome. So that would be great. And I, of course, the female talent that wrestle for Ring of Honor are all people that I absolutely love to work with and would love to work with on a regular basis.
What was it like working with recently with Nikki Rocks? Because we just had her on the did an interview with her just recently, and of course you, the two females that I guess did it all for wrestling. You know, you shaved your head for public consumption. So what's it like working with her that she has a familiar experience that you've had?
Well, for me personally, there's like just a connection with Nikki kind of because of that, you know, because we both did what we did, and it was crazy. And it was funny because Nikki and I have wrestled for Shimmer and wrestled independence and you know, alongside each other for so many years, from the start of my career and until present. And we had never wrestled each other.
Wow.
I think we were tag team partners once, maybe, but we had never faced each other. So when the match for WSU was made, it was awesome because she was one person that I always respected so much, and I was always compared to her, actually. A lot of people drew comparisons between the two of us as wrestlers, and I predicted that wrestling her would be something really great and really fun, and it sure was. I mean, it was a blast.
Who's your dream opponent now? Because you've worked with so many, you know, talented women already. Is there someone out there that you really still want to wrestle that, you know, is still a dream match or a match you still would like to work somewhere down the line?
Yeah, definitely. Victoria is definitely near the top of that list. I think I've wrestled around with her before, but I've never had a match with her. And I think that we would, I think our styles would go well together. Always loved her in-ring work so much. And of course I, can't answer that question without mentioning Mickie James, because we have only wrestled one time, and I've always really looked up to Mickie as a wrestler, as a person. She's just one of the most wonderful people I've had the pleasure of meeting in this business. And I think that I was also very similar to Mickie early on in my career and always kind of wanted to mold myself after her in the OVW days. And I really believe that we could do something special together in the ring, and I hope that we get the chance to do that.
Now, you've been mentioning, you know, your development as a wrestler, and of course you're still developing. You've still been, you know, you've still been in the business really relatively a short time, you know, 6 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in your career, what do you consider your biggest strength, and what is at this point, what do you consider your biggest weakness?
My biggest strength, I would say my bravery has always been my biggest strength and is still my biggest strength. I was raised be very independent and you know, to believe in accomplishing anything. And I did, and I still do. It also translates to traveling and things of that sort that I just love and always look forward to, and gain so much experience from all that. So that's probably my biggest strength. My biggest weakness, I would have to say, is, I guess, being a perfectionist in a way. You know, I'm very much a perfectionist when it comes to my in-ring work. And I won't even be happy with a match if I don't feel very strongly about it and feel like it was near perfect, you know. And I think it's a good trait to have, but it can also be harmful to one's development. And I could go both ways, I suppose.
From here, what are your goals? Obviously, you want to stay with wrestling. I mean, where would you like to be in, say, in 5 years?
Now, that's a tough question for me because, as I said, where I'm at right now, the present, is very good. So I can't really say how I'm going to feel a year from now or 5 years from now or 10 years from now. You know, I think I'm learning to just take things as they come and not really try to predict how I'm going to feel or where I'll be, you know, just really building on the experiences now. And you know, in the near future, I would say that continuing to go to Japan more often and gain that experience is the most crucial to me right now.
Okay, short-term goals. What do you prefer, to work as a babyface or as a heel?
I definitely prefer to work as a heel. I worked as a babyface for the first probably 5 years of my career, maybe four and a half. And I think the first few times that I was given the opportunity to work heel, I just absolutely loved it. I I usually have more fun when I'm working heel.
Is it kind of like you feel yourself from a personality standpoint, it fits you a little bit more, or is it just something that some people are very quiet and shy, and they like to be a heel because it's the side that they can never bring out in their personal life. Is that how you feel, or is it like being a heel is like kind of fits your personality style a little bit more?
I don't know. Like, I don't think it fits my.
Do you like being a bad girl?
Hell yeah. yeah, I mean, it's fun to play parts and play off of a different personality than you normally have. It's very entertaining in itself.
I got one more question, then we got one more question from our Twitter page. I asked you earlier about, you know, the biggest lesson you learned in OVW. What would you say the biggest lesson you've learned overall in your stint as a professional wrestler?
I think patience and just being patient about things is a reoccurring lesson that I've learned while in pro wrestling. And it was actually Lita. I had met her right before I started wrestling, and had asked her, you know, I'm gonna start training, so what's your biggest advice? And her advice was be patient. And just, you know, in very general terms, and I guess I didn't understand it till years later, and I, you know, when you're patient, good things do happen, but you have to wait for them sometimes, because as I said, I really believe that timing is everything, and patience is something that you have to embrace in wrestling, and it's very hard, but it's very important.
Patience is a virtue, right?
That's right.
And then we got a question from our Twitter page. Alexi wants to know about a little bit in your personal life. Do you have plans to start a family? When and how many children would you like to have?
Okay. Cool question. Well, I'm still very young. I just turned 25 a couple months ago, and I still have a long ways in my wrestling career that I want to go. So I don't really see family happening within the next 5-year window. But definitely I would like to have a family one day. I think that would be great. And I was raised in a really awesome family, and I value that. So I think it would be great. But for the next few years of my life, at least, it's not in question.
I see. Good question, Alexi. And she wants to know, how many children do you want to have?
Oh, gosh.
Four or five, you know.
two would probably be the cool number.
People always say four or five, and then when they have one or two, they're like, well.
Yeah, I'm done.
I might be done now.
Totally.
Well, and lastly, before we let you go, what is Serena like away from the ring? What do you like to do when you're not wrestling?
I love to, I do a lot of yoga, and it's become a larger part of my life in the past year, and it's been awesome. So I love to do yoga, and I live in Florida, so I love to go to the beach and things like that. And I love to cook for friends. And, you know, I'm a very simple person and a very happy person. And really just, that's me, basically.
We appreciated your time today. We've really enjoyed talking to you. And before we let you go, why don't you plug any websites you'd like to plug, your social media, any ways for the fans to communicate with you?
Okay, well, the best way to communicate with me is via Twitter at twitter.com/SerenaDeeb. And I do post all of my updates, all of my shows, my schedule on that Twitter. So that is the best way to stay in touch with me.
Awesome. And we do appreciate your time today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Likewise.